Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Great to have you in tomorrow night. Two highest paid quarterbacks, Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, collide on another network. And Sunday, a full slate of NFL games. Mark Schlereth, who's got three rings, multiple Pro Bowlers, a Fox NFL analyst, is joining us live from his beautiful place in Denver. So you got the Seahawks and Falcons. And we were saying this earlier today. There is a movement in Seattle, an active social media movement called Let Russ Cook, where Seahawk fans and by the way, analytic people in the NFL are saying, this is Russell's team. Let's go. Pete Carroll, let's let it go. Now, I know, Mark, your career was built on running the football. But you also right. You also won a lot of games with John Elway. When you're looking and deep diving on that Seattle tape from last year as you prepare for the Seahawks-Falcons game, do you think they need to reboot the offense in Seattle?
Absolutely not. Let Russ cook. You may let him cook. He may be on a spigot because they have not been very good from a protection standpoint. They are really built on being physical, being able to run the ball, and a lot of Russ's big plays in the passing game honestly come from the play-action aspect of their ability to run the football, Colin. So that's a big part of what makes Seattle, Seattle. And, you know, I called the game last year where Baltimore came in there, and their whole premise was shut down their run game and make Russell Wilson throw it 45 times, because we think if we can do that, we think we have the advantage. So I'm not down with the let Russ cook. I'm down with the let the offense operate. And I will tell you this. He's one of the most unselfish players I've ever talked to. And I'm sorry about my dog, but he's really excited about Russell Wilson, obviously. But he's one of the most unselfish players I've ever talked to. And this is a guy that if he throws it five times in the first half, as long as they're winning, he doesn't give a rip. That's what makes him great. And it really is set up off that play action and then his ability to scramble around.
What's your dog's name, by the way?
That is Romeo. And Romeo, very excited about being on the Herd. He has always been a fan. He watches you every single day. And as soon as he saw you on the TV, I mean, he's giving his analysis, obviously. Okay. I apologize, but there's nobody home but me and Romy. So that's what you got.
All right, buddy. Okay, so now I want to concentrate on Atlanta, the team that breaks my heart every year, that's in the Super Bowl a couple years ago, and now they got a coach that's a lame duck coach. And I actually like them in this opener. What is it about this organization? All this talent, Super Bowl MVP level quarterback, and they just don't show up every other Sunday.
Well, part of the issue, Colin, is that you can have talent. I mean, you know, we get enamored by talent because talent is really easy to see. It's easy to see, you know, speed. It's easy to look at Julio Jones and see what Julio Jones brings. It's easy to see just overall talent, speed, and athleticism. The issue is that they can't dominate a line of scrimmage, and they've really never, since they've had Kyle Shanahan, they really never basically majored in anything as a group. And so when I watch their film, one of the issues I have is I like, what are you, a wide zone team, a tight zone team, a bend back team? Are you a power team? Are you a gap team? What do you want to be? What is your run of choice? Like, that's what I would ask. And so I'm watching some tape from last year, and I recognize maybe 12 or 13 completely different schemes. Well, when you run that many schemes on any given Sunday, you don't major in any scheme, right? You basically minor in a bunch of them. So it really renders some of your play action stuff ineffective because you haven't sold any one thing. You haven't made a defense defend any one thing. And so I look at them as having too much volume in their offense. Like, pare it down, major in something, and sell out on that. And that will, you know, I mean, you can look at all your periphery weapons and all your receivers and all that you have there. But the bottom line is, in my mind, you haven't done a good enough job of majoring in one thing in the run game that sets up a lot of the explosive plays, the play action.
Do you listen, my staff just said to me, do you want to take 90 seconds to put your dog away or something?
That would be great.
Okay, go ahead. I'll wait for you.
Okay.
All right.
There you talk amongst yourselves.
All right. So his dog is Romy. And
I almost got a dog right at the beginning of quarantine. And I'm glad I didn't, because we ended up working from home for 2 months.
So you're not a cat person?
I am a cat person, but I have an apartment and like the litter box in the apartment, you know, it's like a full life commitment.
Right.
So I'm glad I didn't, because I was, once we started working from home for 2 months, I was like, oh my God, what would I have done if I had a barker? Like, my goal was to get like the laziest dog possible, but
I got a couple of those.
That's what I need.
Yeah. So I got Buddy and Yossi for Yosemite.
I had a dog, Romeo, in college.
Yeah. The way I look at it, I will say this about dogs. Is on a bad day.
Okay, I'm back.
Nothing puts you in a better mood. All right, there we go. Listen, Romy's a dog. He saw you talking to yourself, and he couldn't figure it out, and he started barking. No big deal.
Yeah, well, he's old, and he's old, and like I said, he's a big Colin Cowherd fan, so he just wanted to say hi.
All right. So, sometimes we overthink the room. And I look at Brady, and he got Leonard Fournette. And Leonard Fournette's actually a really productive guy, considering he played in front of a bad front. And had quarterbacks that people crowded the box. And I look at it and I think to myself, are we overthinking the room here? I got Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. And I've got O.J. Howard. And I got Gronk. And I got Shady McCoy and Ronald Jones. And they upgraded tackle. And I got Leonard Fournette. Stink, are we overthinking it here? This is the most talented offense potentially in the NFC with the most efficient quarterback. And this is going to be a lot better team than we think in Tampa.
Oh, I think two things. One, you're right about the offense, right? You've got Gronkowski. You've got three tight ends that can really play. So you have an ability to attack a defense. You have an ability to really control the middle of the football field. Leonard Fournette, listen, I don't hold anybody accountable for not playing well in Jacksonville, because, Colin, it's Jacksonville.
Right.
And that was one of the most dysfunctional organizations, or is one of the most dysfunctional organizations. Nobody wants to be there anymore. I mean, you've seen mass exodus, right? Guys just begging to get out of there, from Ramsey to Ngakoue now to Leonard Fournette. So Leonard Fournette is a full-grown man, and he is going to fit into that style exceptionally well. I think the other thing that people don't really understand is how good that defense is. They are young on that side of the ball. They are athletic on that side of the ball. Todd Bowles, their defensive coordinator, is a blitz-happy, go-attack. And they've got this philosophical approach that we're going to create some turnovers. We may give up a few big plays, but we're going to create turnovers. We're going to create sacks. We're going to create short fields for that offense and that talent. It's incredible what they've built in Tampa Bay right now with Tom Brady, who at 43 years old is still – absolutely insanely good.
So it's interesting. I really liked Denver about 2 months ago. I didn't love them at left tackle, and then their right tackle opted out. And I thought, oh boy, they're going to become Cleveland, where I like them, but they have a young quarterback with bad tackles. And then Von Miller gets hurt. And this morning I wake up and I think to myself, now I'm not so sure on Denver. Am I overreacting, or losing a right tackle, losing Von Miller, it changes things for Denver?
Yeah, no, it certainly changes things. And I didn't think they were a playoff team anyhow, because I think they've got too many question marks on both sides of the ball. But you're counting not only on a young, talented, but young offensive core, right? That was really what you were counting on being good. And then defensively, being really good on the defensive side of the ball, with Von Miller, with Bradley Chubb, and you were going to overcome some of your issues on the defensive side. Inside linebacking from a coverage standpoint, young corners and corners out of position, they've replaced, essentially three starting corners, three of three. So there were some question marks, but you thought, hey, with Von Miller and with Bradley Chubb, we can overcome those issues at corner early as those guys develop. Well, now all of a sudden, what do you got? Well, Bradley Chubb has been injured, and he's not, you know, he's not full go yet. And I don't know what he'll be on Monday night, if he'll be ready to go or not. But I think at the very least, you're going to have him on a pitch count. And then you've got Von Miller, who looks like he's going to be out for the season. So, yeah, you know, anytime you break the huddle as an offensive player and you've got a guy like Von Miller on that side, you know, I played against guys like Lawrence Taylor and Reggie White. The first thing you do when you leave the huddle, when you go break, is you find that particular guy and you say, we have to have a plan for him. So if you're an opposing quarterback and you're playing against Von Miller, you're looking at yourself and going, hey, man, I don't know, 20% of our offense, we probably have to scrap pile it because we've got to mitigate what he brings to the table from a pass rushing standpoint and from a presence standpoint. So all of a sudden you're going, oh, no Von Miller? Well, that 20% that we just canned is back in our offense now. So it gives me more opportunities. And now if Bradley Chubb is also injured, yeah, this is this could be a 2-3 game swing.
Yeah. Is there a team, I'll put you on the spot here, give me one team in the NFL that everybody likes, everybody's hot on, and Mark Schlereth is like, you know, I don't see it. Who's the team? Everybody's just got them rolled into a 10, 11, 12, and you have some misgivings about them.
Well, I mean, there is always the Cleveland, you know, the hype of Cleveland is going to be great this year, but let's just scrap pile them because I don't buy into that. The Rams are a team in that division, as tough as that division is. And, you know, it was really interesting to me. Everybody last year said, well, the Rams, what were they, 9-7 last year?
Yeah.
Everybody said, well, you know, people have caught up to Sean McVay. No, no, they haven't. They lost the most physical guard in all of football, and Roger Saffold went to Tennessee. There's a reason the correlation of the run game in Tennessee toward the second half of the season really exploded. They also lost their starting center. And what they were disguised as that people didn't realize is the Rams looked like a spread team, but they were really a power run football team that set up all their play action stuff off of that. So in that division with the Niners, as good as the Niners are, with Seattle, as good as Seattle is, with up and coming Arizona and what they were doing last year toward the end of the season, I think the Rams are a team that a lot of people look at as, hey, they're a playoff team that might be sorely mistaken come playoff time.
Yeah, it is funny. Stafford left, and all of a sudden Tennessee could run the ball and the Rams couldn't. It is amazing. You know, you guards don't get any love. We just don't pay attention to you. Sad.
No, you guys don't love us.
It's sad. It is sad. It's a very sad life. Well, go get, what's the dog's name again?
Romeo.
My wife came home and took him for a walk, so she saved the day.
All right, go
work. Sorry about that.
Go work on your lawn.
It's snowing here, Colin. I can't work on my lawn today. It's snowing. It was 98 yesterday, and it was 98 on Monday, and yesterday it was snowed.
Yeah,
welcome
Denver. To Denver. Yeah,
you gotta love it.
Yeah, good seeing you, buddy.
Likewise, bud. Take care.
Sunday, Seahawks Falcons 1 Eastern on Fox. Mark Schlereth has that game. Here's Joy Taylor with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Jimmy Butler led the Heat to a series win over the top-seeded Bucks.
It was very impressive.
It was very impressive. To reach the first conference finals of his career, and he opened up about finally getting to this point in the playoffs.
I mean, he's a lot, but like you said, that's not my goal. That's not my guy's goal. It's not the organization's goal. We want to win it. We want a championship, and I think that's what we're focused on. These next eight are going to be much harder than the previous eight. We know that, but we're ready for it.
You know what? I've always felt you should wait for the playoffs to vote MVP. You could make an argument that Jimmy Butler should be in the MVP race.
For sure.
Who went to an average team and got them to the conference finals? One guy in the league. I mean, if it's most valuable player, he is the most valuable player outside of LeBron this year in the NBA.
Well, the conversation, I guess, is it's a regular season award, right?
So who cares about the NBA?
If we did a playoffs MVP, which, you know, they did a bubble MVP, but if they did a playoffs MVP,
and the word is valuable.
And I guess that comes down to finals MVP, but that can be subjective as well. But no, I agree with you. Jimmy Butler has been absolutely incredible. This was the absolute perfect fit for him.
Change the locker room, change the way they defend.
Well, the Heat have always been a gritty, nasty, villainous kind of team when it comes to defense. That's what Pat Riley likes.
Right.
And Pat Riley, for being the, you know, the suave godfather, cool.
He's a grinder.
He's very, like, serious and grinder and no nonsense. And there's a system and there's the way we do things and there's a standard. And that's showing now. And I'm really proud of this organization, because once LeBron left, we were left for dead. You know, it was like this Spokane coach. And there was, you know, obviously that's how it happens when LeBron James leaves an organization. Obviously Chris Bosh and then Wade. So everything, as it happens, dynasties fall apart at one point or another for whatever reason.
Yeah.
But keeping consistent, and this is a good example of what well-run organizations do. They don't panic when there's change. Change is inevitable. That doesn't mean you have to panic. Yeah. You see organizations that fall apart. They fire people and bring in new coaching staffs, and this doesn't work, so let's try this. You got to be consistent. When you have greatness at the top, you know what to do. You know how to ride the storm, and now they're in the Eastern Conference Finals. Yeah. I mean, that's what good organizations do. It's why I trusted Toronto when they got Kawhi, because there's a well-run organization that's there every single year. They need a superstar to put them over the top.
It's why a lot of these quarterbacks drafted in the NFL struggle. It's not their talent. They go into the wrong place. It's hard to overcome dysfunctional ownership. It's really, you got to be Andrew Luck.
Look, not even. Like, you have to, you can't even be LeBron. Like, LeBron was in Cleveland. He's the greatest player in the league, couldn't overcome it. He left for Miami.
Yeah.
Like, that's where he won his first championship, with a championship-level organization. You can say whatever you want about going back to Cleveland, but that once you got back to Cleveland, he had the blueprint. Then he had the control. Then he was able to say no to this and no to that.
Right.
It's almost impossible to overcome a traditionally dysfunctional organization in any sport, no matter how big of a superstar you are. So speaking of LeBron, he had a great performance in Game 3 last night against the Rockets. It was one of those games where I'm like, man, we are really blessed to be able to watch LeBron James play basketball.
How about blocking all the shots?
Unbelievable. 36 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 blocks in the 112-102 win. The victory also moved him past Derek Fisher into the first in all-time playoff wins with 162.
I was talking to a friend last night about this. I said, why does LeBron look so fresh? Well, he got injured last year, so he didn't play. And this year, because of COVID, he had 3 months off. I've never seen LeBron look this fresh as we get ready for the Western Conference Finals here.
No, he has like a bounce in his
step. Like, LeBron's had about a year now. He just hasn't played that much basketball. And I don't think the pandemic benefited anybody more than LeBron, who in year 17 is like, yeah, we're going to wipe out a big chunk of the regular season. He looks...
Because he's always taken incredible care of his body and has miraculously not had major injuries. Like, he's done an incredible job with that. So it makes perfect sense that him having that extra time off from the injury, blessing in disguise, they weren't going to be able to make it through to the championship with that team last year anyway, even if they had made the playoffs. This is a great scenario for him and a huge milestone for him as well, which, you know, of course, after the game, he said the right thing, as he always does, but... That was like a vintage LeBron game.
The block shots is what he used to do his first 6 years in the league. But you, over time, he'll give you the points. I can't run up and down the floor blocking everybody's shot. Like,
right, that's what we're very critical of him after a while. He doesn't play any defense anymore. He just looks great right now. Finally, Bill Belichick is facing a new challenge this season, coaching a team without Tom Brady for the first time in 20 years. He's one of the oldest coaches in the league at 68, but when he was asked about the possibility of leaving the team in 2021, he gave his standard response.
I'm just trying to get ready for Miami, Glenn. I don't know. Honestly, long term for me would be Sunday.
I like this new Bill. He's got commercials, and he's being funny. He's praising his quarterback.
I know. Life of the party.
It's wild.
Subway commercial.
Of all the things you would have expected in 2020. I don't want to get into the Bill Belichick retirement conversation. We talked about Tom Brady retiring for like 10 years.
How about this, though? That's like replacing Howard Stern. Let somebody else do it coming after that.
Yeah, who would you rather replace, Tom Brady or Bill Belichick? I think Tom Brady.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you're just not going to be that good. Because some of,
right.
I mean, Tom Brady is, some of his success was circumstantial. With Belichick, he's just smarter than everybody. His brain's not circumstantial.
It's going to be something to have to replace Bill Belichick. But I am not going to start having the replacing Bill Belichick conversation. Bill will let us know when he's retired. We don't need to project and worry about it. I don't want to have that conversation. Every single year. Is Tom Brady going to retire? I don't know. He wants to play 3 more years. I don't know. It doesn't matter. We'll find out all together at once. Can we just do that? Let's just agree.
Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Three-word game, NFC style, and best for last is coming up next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Boost your healthy testosterone, burn fat. Check it out, mdriveformen.com. They've got boost and burn. Joy Taylor is joining me. It's best for last. We did the three-word game yesterday with the AFC. Today it's the NFC. Where we believe you can describe every team's fate in just 3 words, forces you to get right to the point. And here we go with the NFC three-word game. Dallas, Dak in saddle. Despite heavy speculation, Dak Prescott signed a franchise tag, second most passing yards in the NFL last year. The downside, he did it against bad teams and was 1-6 against playoff teams. An aging offensive line, like him or not, Dak in the saddle. New York, don't judge yet. Listen, last 3 years, they were 0-12 against the Eagles and Cowboys. It can't get worse with Joe Judge. He replaces Pat Shurmur, who's more of a coordinator personality than a head coach. I did think Daniel Jones was surprisingly nimble and efficient, and I did think they had a good draft. And I like a couple of their free agent acquisitions. So Dave Gettleman's not my fave, but I thought they had a very good offseason. Philadelphia, Hurt versus Hurts. Carson Wentz is always hurt, and they drafted Jalen Hurts. Both will play this year. They lost Brandon Brooks, one of the best interior offensive linemen in the NFL, but they acquired Darius Slay, who I think you can argue is the first or second best corner in the league, and that has been a problem position for the Eagles in the last several years. Washington, ride the Rivera. Worst scoring offense and worst passing offense in the NFL, and they hired a defensive coach. The good news, Dwayne Haskins, last 2 starts, 4 touchdowns, no picks, 73% completion percentage. Take a deep breath. Let's give him 6 to 7 to 8 starts. Then we'll make judgments. Chicago must ditch Mitch. Last among all qualified quarterbacks last year at 6 yards an attempt. Let's be honest. He doesn't throw the ball down the field. He's a good kid. He works hard. He's kind of athletic. He doesn't let it go. And it's an Alex Smith thing, but he doesn't throw the ball as well as Alex Smith. Now, the good news is they have the easiest 6-game stretch to start the season of anybody, but it's not an easy division. Detroit, lying to themselves. Matt Patricia's not working. He's 9-22-1. It's not working. Matt Stafford's now an old 32, missed 8 games last year. They lost Darius Slay. I think Patricia, at the end of last year, lost the locker room. A lot of people like Detroit this year. I think they're lying to themselves. Green Bay. Can Aaron LaFleurish, Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers, listen, Aaron's 37, gets more banged up. Passer rating last 3 years, under 100. Completion percentage last 3 years, declined. He's only got one weapon on the perimeter. That's why he was upset they didn't get a wide receiver. I think they're good, but not special. Minnesota, Minnie will winnie. Listen, Kirk Cousins drives us nuts, right? Bottom line, Delvin Cook, star, had his best year ever. Offensive line, last 2 drafts, upgraded. Adam Thielen, 2 tight ends I like. And Mike Zimmer's an excellent defensive coach. We may think they have a low ceiling. This is a good football team. This is a really good football team. Good GM, good coach, capable quarterback in kind of a Derek Carr sense that, you know, we think there's limitations on letting it go. But Minnesota's well run. It's a good football team. They're going to win this division. Carolina, Atlanta peaked in 2016. Since the Super Bowl loss, they're 24-24. And Matt Ryan got the you-know-what kicked out of him last year. He got sacked 48 times. This is their one great asset. Protect him, please. This is not difficult in the NFL. You get a good quarterback, draft offensive lineman, protect Matt Ryan. Todd Gurley is an interesting acquisition. It didn't work in L.A. at the end, but if you can get 65, 70 yards, Gurley's a pretty good pass catcher at running back, and he did play in the South, so he may feel like he's home again, and he won't have the innate pressure of that massive contract in L.A. So I do think Todd Gurley works here for this organization. All right, Carolina. Ready, Teddy, go. Teddy Bridgewater's 22-12 as a starter in the NFL. That's like 65% winning percentage. Okay, I know he doesn't have a big arm. Neither does Drew Brees. This is a Christian McCaffrey, Curtis Samuel, DJ Moore, Matt Rhule, decent offensive line. Now, last year, actually, their defense was kind of a mess. I think they're going to score a lot of points. I think they're rebuilding. I think they're going to be a pain. I think Matt Rhule is going to bring energy. I think Teddy Bridgewater doesn't turn the ball over. I don't think they're a playoff team, but I have a feeling we're going to look up halfway through the season and they're ruining people's lives. New Orleans, one last March. Brees, 20th season. This is it. Then he's going to be a TV announcer. Malcolm Jenkins, Emmanuel Sanders, good pickups. I like it. I like it. One last March. Joy thinks they're in the Super Bowl. Good argument to be made. NFC West, Arizona. Oh, sorry, darn it, Tampa. Found their treasure. All-time winningest quarterback, Gronk, Shady McCoy, Leonard Fournette, all engineered by the best quarterback of all time. He'll change the locker room, the intensity, the efficiency, the urgency. He is LeBron. He is beyond good. He brings so many leadership qualities to a team you just can't duplicate. Arizona, Murray up offense. Kyler Murray, offensive rookie of the year. What I like, they do what Seattle hasn't. They kind of give it to him and say, let's go. It's your offense. Los Angeles, ready to resurge. Sean McVay, winning record, top 10 offense. Each year under him, let's not go crazy. If the protection's good, Goff has excellent weapons. I'll argue this. Best receiving core in the NFL. And Van Jefferson, the rookie, has looked great at camp. San Francisco, Shan the man, Mike Shanahan, Kyle Shanahan. They run the football. Three different players rushed for over 500 yards last year. They're 10-0 when Garoppolo throws for 275 yards, and he will. And finally, Seattle, for Pete's sake, stop running the ball so much. Russell Wilson, only NFL quarterback in history to lead his team to a winning record each of his first 8 years. Pete, throw the ball. Stop running so much. We're back tomorrow for joining everybody. It's the Herd.